You're listening to a podcast from 702.
Hello, Aza. Concerning free vaccination, I'm not sure because at Flora Clinic, when you go there to vaccinate, they want you to be having a medical aid. So what's the point if it's free? Why do they ask for medical aid? If you don't have medical aid, you are turned back.
Public hospitals. Remember, this is for public hospitals. Fiyomaga was speaking. Maga was speaking about the provisions that the state has made. So this is in connection with public hospitals, and even the addition of the 25 sites. It relates to public facilities. So all the vaccination sites that are run by the provincial government. Yes, it seems with certain institutions, with certain pharmacies, with certain medical aid sites, you will be required to produce your medical aid. But if you turn to the public. To the public hospitals, it is for free. He confirmed that earlier.
702
Series Edition.
Let's get into our series. We are into episode 3 now, of this month's series. And it's called Transformotion, you know, a play on transformation. And it's all about achieving future readiness. We've been guided through it by a best-selling author, Singularity University faculty member. He's a global speaker and a trend specialist, and that is John Sané. It's been fascinating so far. And John has weaved quite a story that I haven't experienced before. And you're welcome, of course, to go back to our previous podcast. Check him out on The Upside of Failure. Check him out on the first two episodes, as we're now in episode 3. Good afternoon, John.
Wonderful to be with you again, Azania. How are you doing?
I'm very good, thank you. You know, we were talking about unemployment, youth unemployment, a little bit earlier on. And interestingly, today we're looking at the future of work from surplus to creator economy. And I get a sense that there will be a lot of nuggets, in fact, that link to the state that we find ourselves in this country. So let's frame this discussion yet again about how transformation, in fact, relates to the future of work.
Yeah, and it's a very, very unfortunate position we're in here in South Africa with such a high percentage of youth not working. But this is also indicative of a worldwide issue where people are looking for employment, studying and going through the linear process of studying and looking for a job. I think that whole paradigm is shifting. We are arriving in an era I'm calling the era of forced entrepreneurship. It's almost being forced upon us to develop our own skill sets and not rely on any organization or company that has to then make sure that we're getting a salary, because you're always 1 month away from being fired or the business being disrupted. And the only thing we can really guarantee is our own genius and our own ability to build businesses based on that. And even that is a bit of touch and go, but at least you have your own destiny in your own hands. So this whole concept of transformation, again, for anybody who's listening for the first time, is this idea that we're moving at hyper pace towards an uncertain future. And this has many people up in arms and many people anxious, because our society has been addicted to certainty for the very longest time. We have always done things for the process of safety and guaranteed outcomes. If you think about what you studied, you most probably didn't study what you loved, but what would give you a guaranteed income and a guaranteed job. And so we find ourselves in this new world where there are no certainties. No matter what you've studied, it doesn't guarantee you anything. No matter how long you've worked with an organization, it doesn't guarantee you anything. So everybody in a state of flux and a state of panic to a certain extent. And so today's session, we're really about how do we circumvent the panic and how do we go about developing the skill sets and understanding what sort of world is ahead of us.
Yes. And let's start with one of the components of today's theme. You talk about a surplus society. Oh, I dread to think about what that means. What is a surplus society?
And unfortunately, what has happened over the last 200 years or so is that the world has been building role players for organizations. And what I mean by that is, if you think about when we were kids, Azania, you know, you would have five different careers available to you. You know, you could be a doctor, a lawyer, an engineer, or a failure, I guess, you know. But those were the sort of very specific roles we could adopt to play a role in the machine that was the Industrial Revolution. And so what has happened over the last 200 years is we've developed more and more people that have been trained in similar ways. So where we're sitting right now is a problem called the surplus society problem, where we have a surplus of similar companies employing similar people with similar educational backgrounds, coming up with similar ideas, producing similar things with similar prices and similar quality. And so what has happened is that not only are products and services becoming commoditized, but so are jobs and so are degrees, because there's just so many of them. And we know now that because of the global workforce, if you don't like your job, there's 15 people in India or China waiting to do your job for a fraction of what you wanted to pay for it.
Yeah.
So we're living in the surplus society that has just created too many clever people. We don't have enough wise people. We have very many clever people. And now what's happened is that you get your degree and it's not actually enough. Now you need to go do a PhD, an MBA, a Schmemba. I mean, carry on becoming an academic, you know, alphabetical soup, because you've got to keep adding on to these things to try and stand out from the crowd. And that is becoming a problem. And so what we have to realize is that we are almost reversing back to pre-industrial times. And let me explain this, because pre-industrial times, we had every town, village had its own little micro business. And what we are doing today is we're going back to that space where you can create your own micro business, right? Except now your clients are borderless. You have the whole world that you can sell your products and services to, where we are reverting back to this pre-industrial time, which is actually called the creator economy, or the passion economy that we're starting to see grow around the world.
Pre-industrial times. I mean, we're talking about the fourth industrial revolution. It almost sounds like a contradiction in terms.
Can I say that it shouldn't be called the fourth industrial revolution? And I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
I think it's caught people's imagination because they understand that it's an involvement. But there's nothing industrial about where we're going. There's no linear production lines. And so to call it the fourth industrial revolution is a bit misleading. What it should be called is the first dematerialization movement. Mm-hmm. In other words, we are dematerializing everything around us. There's no factories. Everything is digital. And so we have to realize that we're actually moving into a brand new paradigm where we're ending the industrial revolution and moving into a digital evolution. And so in this digital evolution, the rules are different to all the industrial revolutions that have come before us, you know. And so what we also have to take into mind, which is also part of today's topic, is there's a great speaker and economist called Jeremy Rifkin, and he's written a book called The Zero Marginal Cost Society. Mm-hmm. And in this book, what he explains is that anything that is digitized eventually is replicated for almost nothing. Mm-hmm. So if you think about photos, for example, you know, you can take a million photos, send them to a million different friends at almost nothing compared to what it used to cost. And so as we move into this new world of zero marginal cost society with many, many experiences, services and products becoming almost free for us to access, it becomes even harder to do the rudimentary left brain stuff to earn money. Because not only is digitization making that stuff more accessible and more free to us, which we are benefiting from in many ways, but we also can't be selling that as a service anymore because it's becoming digitized. And that's where automation comes in, because also automation is taking on pretty much every job out there as having parts of it being automated.
Yeah.
So how automation works, it picks up patterns. And the minute it picks up any patterns, it repeats it and can repeat it for almost nothing. So what we have now is parts of lawyers' jobs, parts of doctors' jobs, even authors. I mean, there's a website I can send all your listeners to that you can put in any topic you want. And in the sort of the platform writes you an article, writes you an essay on that topic. And if you copy and paste that article that it's written and put it into Google. It's never been written before. So this is a brand new way. Yeah, it's called Hyperwrite. Check it out. Hyperwrite.
Check all of us and writing quickly, like taking it down.
Yeah, yeah, Hyperwrite. Yeah, look, there's my job gone. You know, as an author, it's been automated.
Yeah.
So we must realize that the world we're moving into is not one of employment, employer.
Yeah.
That ideology is starting to fade away. And so we have to start realizing that the new paradigm requires us to engage with digitization and automation as a friend and start to develop new skill sets, which we can unpack in the session.
Yes, yes. But I mean, just the other day I was saying to my kids, because I was so furious about the power cuts, and I was saying to them, make sure you study, you become an expert or something. You make sure that you kind of put, you hedge yourself away from the drama, you know, and be skilled, highly skilled at something. And you're saying, no.
Yeah. So look, Malcolm Gladwell made famous the 10,000 hours, right? Mm-hmm. The 10,000 hour rule. If you want to become prolific at something, do it for 10,000 hours and you'll have that sort of professional badge attached to it. Then a couple of years ago, a book came out called Range. And in it, the author explains that how the 10,000 hour rule can actually hold you back. And on the cover of that book, Malcolm Gladwell states, I love having my theories disproven and learning new ones. So what we realize is the old world required us to be experts. The new world requires us to be sort of experts at many different things, not just one thing. And so the problem with the expert problem, which is actually defined by a guy called Herman Kahn, he says, the more expert, or at least the more educated a person is, the less likely that person is to see a solution when it is not within the framework in which he or she was taught to think in. And this we see with bankers that are complaining about Bitcoin because it doesn't fit into their ideology of what money should be. And so they are suffering from the expert problem, not seeing the next step. And we can count how many different industries are suffering from the expert problem because people are scared of anything new. So they hold on to their old ideologies. So what we need to be doing with our kids is we need to be exposing them to as many different careers, many different businesses as possible to see what lights them up. And it's that lighting up that we need to then hone in on, because the world that we are moving into requires grit more than ever before. Grit to be passion led in what you're doing, because it's only that passion that is going to give you the energy to deal with the level of uncertainty and change that's coming. Logic will not give you that level of comfort and energy. So how do you create grit? You create grit by having been exposed to many different jobs and businesses so you can find out what actually you're passionate about and then apply the grit mindset to that passion. And now you're naturally adaptable and you're not suffering from the expert problem of one ideology that you've been taught for many years.
Yeah. So what is that grit mindset? You touched on it last week in the previous episode, in fact, as really being key for success at the moment.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is they did that experiment with a whole bunch of different people around what is the most important characteristic that we need in order to be successful in the future. And they didn't say it was background, it wasn't gender, it wasn't any of those things. It was actually grit. Mm-hmm. And it's the strongest predictor of success after many studies. So in order for you to be passionate and have perseverance over long periods of time, you need to have grit. And so what do you have to do is you have to find what you're actually here for. You know, Mark Twain said it best. He said, the two most important days of your life are when you're born and when you find out why. And it's in that finding out why that moves us away from the surplus society and moves us away from the expert problem and moves us into the creator economy. And in this creator economy, you have no competition because nobody is like you. And now you're not suffering from the surplus issue. Now you're totally unique in what you're doing and you can collaborate and build a tribe of fans around the world that can buy your product, your service, or your ideologies. And that's really where we're moving to. Remember, we spoke about the micro entrepreneur with the families, with the butcher, the baker, and the candlestick maker in those villages. Today, we have a proliferation of what those services and products are. And also, there's no borders. So you can sell it as far and wide as you want. So if you look at some characters right now, for example, Mr. Beast, I don't know if you know him, but he's a 23-year-old YouTuber who's on his way to becoming the first YouTube billionaire. But if you watch the mindset of how he's going about building his brand, he is the poster child for the creator economy.
Right.
And that's something we need to be watching, because it's really going to be one of the most important things we do, is develop our own sort of substance in this creator economy. And I'll give you a quick example. You know, Elon Musk has more followers than Tesla and SpaceX combined. Bill Gates has more followers than Microsoft has. And what does that tell you is that we are more leading towards personalities and humans that are leading us than organizations. Whereas in previous years, organizations were much bigger than personal brands. Today, we're starting to see personal brands are becoming bigger than big organizational brands. And that is what the creator economy is all about.
Well, I've often also, just as a little side note, heard that we should advance the business, for instance, do like what the business actually does, the intelligence in it, the unique selling proposition, you know, what it does, and move the personality away from it. And you're saying that's actually, does that mean that that is foundational? That's a given, that what you have built needs to be solid anyway for the name that sits on top of it to enjoy all of the acclaim?
Well, look, I think it's a hard question to answer in broad terms, because every business has its own ideologies and processes. But remember that whoever's building that business won't be building it forever. So Joe Soap is building a tech business today. Tomorrow he's a farmer. If I'm building trust with Joe Soap, then whatever Joe Soap starts selling, I'm happy to buy it from them. Mm. And so it's building that trust currency, and you can do that in your personal capacity more so than you can do it in a company capacity. Look at Elon Musk. I mean, Elon Musk, whatever he touches, we all trust him, because we also like, yeah, of course, it's Elon Musk. You know, next week he'll be selling avocados and we'll be buying avocados from him. So it's building that trust, which is really what the economy, the creator economy is about. It's building that personal trust, that human touch, and obviously using social media, and you know this so well because you're so great at it, but building that trust with your community using all these channels is really what sets you up for future success.
Mm, and we're not talking about content creator or just the creative sector. You're saying create whatever industry it may be, create something.
Yeah, look, we all want thought leaders. We want advisors. We want helpers. We want people we can trust when it comes to our relationships, when it comes to biotech, when it comes to driving, when it comes to economy, everything, all of it. We want and trust people. And we all have these heroes that we look up to, and we buy into them, and we develop these parasocial relationships, these one-sided friendships. Mm. And I'm sure many people must come up to you and talk to you like they know you, because they've just gotten to know you. You just don't know them. But now we can do it on massive scales, you know, and I'm sure if we bump into Elon Musk, we kind of know him, you know, like kind of have watched him do very many awkward keynotes, because he's not great at that. But, you know, we kind of know him. So it's really about building that trust, no matter what you're doing, building that thought leadership so you can influence people and build your tribe around you.
Yeah. So let's get back to something that you had said earlier on about the mindset. This is about this is transform motion after all. And the mindset is key. So does that mean we have to adopt a growth mindset? And can you define what that is?
Yes, of course. Satya Nadal, when he took over, who I'm a huge fan of, just by the way, I love him so much. But when he took over Microsoft 8 years ago, maybe even 10 years ago now, he got all of his staff to read a book by Carol Dweck called Growth Mindset. And Carol Dweck is a Stanford University professor and researcher. And she works with a guy called Andrew Huberman, who's also a neuroscience researcher. And their work is really fascinating, because it's actually going into the neuroscience of what change looks like and how our brains either resist it or jump onto it, you know? And so what growth mindset is really this ability for us to access dopamine more often. And so what this means is that what we've done for the longest time is we've created something called a dopamine prediction error, where we only allow ourselves the celebration of dopamine once we've achieved something, not through the challenge of achieving something. So they did many tests, and one of the tests they did were with Navy SEALs. And the guys who made it through the Navy SEALs were the ones who were actually enjoying the challenge and allowing their brains to receive dopamine. And dopamine itself gives you more energy, gives you more happiness, gives you more joy. And so you're able to access more of this energy more often when you celebrate the small wins. And so what has happened is that our society, like, think about your kids, right? So if you're studying hard, that's great. If you're nervous about your exam the night before, that's great. But if you get an A, then we'll go out for dinner. Mm-hmm. And then we'll celebrate it. That is called a dopamine prediction error. And so what that means is that we haven't celebrated the effort. We haven't celebrated the challenge. And so if we find ourselves today in an uncertain, highly complex world that's constantly changing, and if we always looking for perfect outcomes, mm-hmm. then only celebrating on those perfect outcomes and they don't come into fruition, you're having a miserable life. Mm-hmm. Because in neuroscience terms, you're not allowing yourself to actually enjoy challenge. And so growth mindset says, I'm not fixed in what I think. I'm not an expert in what I know. Yeah. I'm not part of the surplus society. I'm constantly learning and relearning. And I enjoy that because I understand that the future requires hyper adaptability. And so we have to understand our neuroscience has been trained with industrial revolution, linear outcomes, and we have to shift our brains' access to dopamine for this new dynamic quantum world that's coming.
You know, with the conversation we had just before 2 o'clock, John, I wish that we had time to look at how this can be applied in communities that are on the margins, you know, in contexts where there's a lot of a loss of hope, you know, for instance.
I have some ideas.
Okay.
One of them is that we need to make heroes of people that have made it out those situations. Mm-hmm. One. They need to become more prevalent in our media. They need to become the heroes that we actually look up to. Two, the only thing that's stopping these people on the margins is access to the internet and cheap technology. And once we're able to build those, and those are coming, you know, if you think about SpaceX, there's about 20 or 30 companies right now looking at putting balloons, drones, satellites into the orbit to give everybody free fast Wi-Fi. And that's coming. It's in the next few years that's coming. We just need to build the initiative within our culture, within the tone of who we are, South Africans, to see ourselves as responsible for our destiny and not be caught up with the fact that government hasn't provided or corporates haven't given us the jobs or educational systems have let us down, because all of those are going to continuously get worse.
Yes.
Because there's more people putting more pressure on age-old systems. So we have to shift and say, who are our heroes? Who can we look up to? How can we be motivated by the people that have made it out the townships? And then how do we get access to internet and the initiative to self-train and become informal educators of ourselves and move forward with that? You know, my career, I've never had any formal education. And I actually think it's put me in a good stead because I'm totally different. I like to think I'm totally different to other people who are doing what I do because I just haven't had that structural thinking put onto me. Mm. So yes, it's a big ask. But I think the direction we're going in could be a bit faulty because people are still looking for education and jobs. And what I'm saying is build new heroes, build free internet access, and give people the initiative to start informal education of themselves.
Yeah, we're going to have to pick that up again next week. So much to think about. My page is full of notes, as it always happens in our conversations. Thank you very much, John. Till next week, we're out of time, sadly. But we've got, I think, two more. Yeah, we've got two more, in fact, in the series Transformotion with John Sine, best-selling author, Singularity faculty member. He's also a global speaker and trend specialist.